Welcome to our new series of bonus episodes of Hot Off the Wire called Behind the Headlines. These periodic episodes feature experts, journalists, and newsmakers offering their perspective on a specific topic. I'm Terry Lipschitz, senior producer at Lee Enterprises, and your host for this episode. In October, billionaire business magnate and investor Elon Musk completed his purchase of the social media platform Twitter. Since that time, a variety of moves to cut costs as well as try and generate more revenue for the platform have led some to wonder whether Musk's acquisition was the beginning of the end for the popular microblogging site. While Twitter has many critics, our guest today is raising concerns over a world without Twitter, as the platform has proven to be an important source of real-time information as well as geotag data. I'd like to introduce Dr. Anjana Susarla, Professor of Information Systems at Michigan State University. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
You recently wrote an article for The Conversation, What the World Would Lose with the Demise of Twitter, Valuable Eyewitness Accounts and Raw Data on Human Behavior, as well as a Habitat for Trolls. Can you talk a little bit about that article and how that came about?
Yeah, so Twitter has, been something closest that we have to a global public square because it's microblogging service and 280 character limit. And it's the conversations on Twitter, it's easy to sort of have a thread and in real time. And then people can respond, or the features of tweets also, the discoverability of content, when something becomes trending enough, people can see it outside your own immediate network. So because of that, I think conversations on Twitter have a kind of virality. And so Twitter has been a place for a lot of public personalities, whether it's journalists or celebrities, to connect with their audiences. And Twitter has also been, because it's so connected with real-time events, it's provided us for researchers, people who study a variety of things. They can be cybersecurity experts. They can be experts who study things like human trafficking. Or they can be weather researchers who are following things like wildfires or climate change. If there's any major incident, we can go to Twitter, we can collect all these real-time tweets, hashtag with a certain event or hashtags, different events. And it's given us this kind of very valuable repository of human behavior, almost real-time human behavior.
I know a lot of criticism of Twitter is that it's become a place where trolls go to live. Obviously, a lot of misinformation, but in your experience, how much of Twitter is that, and how much of it is just kind of like the reporting and communications on a daily basis?
I think it's hard to put a number, because Elon Musk initially last year, when he put a bid for Twitter, he said something about number of bots and so forth. It's hard to quantify saying 5% of Twitter traffic is bots. There are quite a few bots, obviously. We know that now. But the main thing I would say is, yes, of course, anything that is such an open place where there's so much open communication, there will be misinformation, there will be trolls. But nonetheless, it's also been, I think, pretty much the only platform that has this sort of openness. Their Facebook doesn't have the same level of real-time interactivity. It's not designed for real-time conversations. And then we have all these video services like TikTok and Insta, platforms that are meant for engaging. But again, it's not that back and forth that you can have this conversation, or that we can actually engage in sort of connecting with other people, like-minded individuals, or people with different opinions, maybe. And so I think has been the unique thing about Twitter. And I think that some of those things we still see that, during the World Cup soccer, we still see a lot of real-time conversations, trending things, breaking on Twitter. So that's what the point I was trying to make.
I have a Twitter account. I have a couple of handles. I don't post regularly, but I find myself using it during the course of the year. I'm a baseball fan. Mm-hmm. So during the off season, I find myself sitting on Twitter a lot, looking to see what kind of transactions might be happening as teams try to sign players, or during the season, as teams are looking to maybe move players before a trade deadline. I find myself engaging with Twitter a lot more, not necessarily tweeting anything, but just kind of following along. Do you see a lot of that kind of use as well, just as like in real time, keeping up with what the events at the moment are, whether it's sports or news or politics?
Yes, I think, and that's what I said, because there's so much of the platform is really designed for very real-time conversations in the moment, short snippets of information. So it's almost like a way you can monitor public discourse. You can identify things before it's reported on the news, or something to add to maybe official news services. And I think that's what I tried to say in the article I've written, that there's really sort of a Twitter sentiment we can even drill down to like specific neighborhoods. It's actually a very good proxy to understand how people are thinking or feeling in that area. And so Twitter, the unique thing is you can have geotagging of tweets. Not everything is geotagged, but we can extract some of those conversations. That gives us a great way to measure sort of public attitudes and in the moment how people are thinking about something. So especially when there's some big events, like a presidential inauguration or the World Cup or some baseball game, that's a great place to see what people are saying.
I saw in your article you referenced a public health study, actually, that conversations related to HIV and AIDS mm-hmm. led researchers to find some correlation. What was learned in a study like that?
What would we learn? I think it's just the good thing for researchers is it gives us a different way to measure public attitudes. If we try to survey people about attitudes towards, HIV or any kind of difficult to measure attitudes, it's not easy to, you'll just send a survey, how many people will you reach, what is the bias and sampling and so forth. But if you're trying to measure some things from Twitter, it's one very good way to assess aggregate level what people are thinking about, in a particular region. And that's very interesting because people may say different things, but on consistent basis, what they are saying in some sort of public forum, it's a good way to measure attitudes or even willingness to pay for like things like climate change policies and things like that.
That's an interesting point. So what you're saying is, let's say I'm a polling company reaching out to somebody before the election to kind of get your feeling. Are you going to vote for a Democrat or Republican or this candidate or that? Somebody mm-hmm. who knows your calling specifically about that might change their answer, might answer differently. But if you're just tweeting about something randomly, like I might be supporting this candidate or I have these kinds of views, it almost gives an unfiltered opinion of something.
Yeah, I think that sometimes it's also they may not directly say anything about a particular candidate, but we can look at correlations to other things that person has written or said, and we can infer. Like I said, it's just a very good tool for researchers, for pollsters, for public policy experts, for people to just, to get a sense of overall attitudes, overall sort of behavioral changes as well. So there's this question of how much hesitancy people have towards vaccines. So measuring things on Twitter, measuring tweets, will give us some sort of a good idea. You can correlate tweets and zip codes, and that's to sort of tells us where there's more vaccine hesitancy, where there is less vaccine hesitancy and things like that.
That's an interesting use. How accurate is the geo data that's coming out of this? Because obviously is this something that you as a end user would turn on to your Twitter profile, or is it just picking it up off of your phone data?
I think that sometimes it's happening because people have not been sensitive to what they're disclosing when they're tweeting. And so that's something I would be worried about personally in terms of giving away my identity. But, you know, also the thing is that many times people might post pictures on Twitter, and there's geotagging from the picture as well, depending on where it was, because our phones do identify all those. And again, one more thing is, yes, depending on which app you're using to post to Twitter, that may be one more place where there is geotagging of tweets. And we may not realize that, because this is actually a security concern. During, I think, the Winter Olympics that happened in Sochi in Russia, it was actually, some researchers pointed out that athletes, they are posting some tweets about where they are. But because of the geotagged nature of some of these tweets, it's very sensitive personal information they're giving out, and that can make them vulnerable to what if somebody wants to engage in some harm.
Yeah, that's an interesting side effect to that. As somebody that researches and looks at information technology, how real is the potential that Twitter might go away? Is this something that's talked in your community that this is a real concern, or is this kind of a, you know, it's a new owner who's putting in a lot of changes and it's just going to blow over in 6 months and we'll kind of go back to how things were?
The two things that we've seen is that, one, Twitter is having problem paying its bills. So there are reports that they are even behind with their rent payments in San Francisco. And the other thing that we've seen is that a lot of advertisers have left Twitter. Twitter is even saying you can advertise for free and things like that. So there is clearly some trouble with making money so far. So that's the cause for concern. Again, I think the user experience on Twitter has not changed that drastically. It's definitely different. But the question is, has this driven away advertisers? It definitely has. Will they come back? That's always a challenge. In social media, once the advertisers have gone, it's very difficult for them to come back. They'll find a different platform. We've seen the Friendsters of the world. And once people leave, the advertising dollars leave, then it's a tricky situation.
Like, I know Facebook has kind of come under scrutiny and over time, and other platforms as well. So even if Twitter does survive, there is that potential that users may just go elsewhere and that valuable data that you're able to gain might be gone.
Yes, I think that's the nature of all these social media platforms. And as you mentioned, Facebook itself has that problem that they are bleeding advertisers.
I know we talked a little bit about this at the top of the conversation, but do you see any viable alternatives to Twitter right now? I know Mastodon has gotten mentioned a lot. I've seen Discord and Tumblr and Reddit get mentioned. Obviously, there's the visual platforms like TikTok and Instagram, but are there any, in the moment, any viable alternatives?
I think Mastodon has been good for specific, like, smaller communities. There are people in research who used to use Twitter to connect with academic colleagues. Now some of those conversations have migrated. But you have the same challenge, which is that it's a place where one can connect with people who are like you. But if you just want to get a sense of trends, like what's happening with this baseball game, or if you're following soccer, there's some big upset in the World Cup, you know, some big team like Germany lost to some relatively less known team. Those are conversations that are still more fun or more engaging on Twitter. It's Mastodon and other platforms still don't provide the same. Of course, the question also is, the younger participants on social media platforms are not very interested even in Twitter. They've all gone to TikTok and platforms like that. So,
yeah, and that always seems to be the thing. You know, Facebook started out as as a college students on it, and then it seemed like as soon as their parents discovered it, then they moved on. Yes. So that certainly is the potential too with Twitter, regardless of what happens with Elon Musk.
That's right. I think that there's, by definition, most of social media platforms, it is hard to maintain that relevance for too long. And it doesn't matter who's the owner, probably. And Elon Musk anyway has enough issues to probably worry about right now, because Tesla has also had a huge drop in stock price. And
sure,
the sales forecasts have been considerably downgraded compared to maybe this time last year.
You mentioned in your article also that Twitter adds, I know we talk about how it can drive polarizing nature and conversations, but it could also work as a good way to verify and fact check information too. Can you talk a little bit about that? And I guess, is there any concern from your end too, because Elon Musk has looked to monetize that little check mark. Will that actually dilute credibility?
Yes, I think, especially when it comes to Twitter, because the way they used to provide the blue check in the past, that has been a good way for journalists to get on Twitter. That it's been a good way for, I would say, public health agencies or even fire departments across the U.S., a lot of local organizations, health organizations, hospitals, they're all on Twitter. And how does that help? If there is some big emergency in our area, there's a drinking water problem, and your local water department is sending out some sort of tweets or sending messages, that's thing you can trust. And so those are, in terms of crisis like wildfires or flooding, etc., those have been very invaluable. And that's the reason that Twitter has served as an official fact checker, because we can immediately, if somebody posts something, we don't have to trust it unless it's coming from, an authenticated journalist or news source or something like that. And if we take that away and we just monetize, there's all kinds of dangerous things that can happen, which is, we saw that with when they rolled out that blue check, paid blue check. Someone who claimed to be Eli Lilly tweeted, "Insulin is free." And that caused the stock price to tank. And it's not just Eli Lilly, a few other pharmaceutical companies. Because anytime something like this happens, the public as well as shareholders would feel like, something is fundamentally wrong about these kinds of pricing models. And that's sort of that negative sentiment affects stock prices of not just companies like Eli Lilly, but their closest competitors. And we've seen that in the past with, if there's any automobile, Volkswagen had an emission scandal. Their closest competitors also face a negative effect in terms of stock market reactions. So those are real dangers. Anyone can pretend to be someone else if we don't have a credentialing and verification service, and we want to monetize it. But monetization, it's not enough to monetize things. It's also enough. You need to have a mechanism by which people can trust certain accounts, and there's a trust building or a verification and validation that the earlier blue check service was providing that we now don't have.
Just to go off topic slightly, and we talked a little bit about TikTok as another social media platform, but that one has also been in the news a lot lately. A lot of government agencies of late have been banning the use of TikTok on government devices out of concern that the Chinese government might be able to use that information, because TikTok is owned by ByteDance, which is a Chinese company. How valid, in your opinion, are those concerns? What are your thoughts on TikTok and that issue right now?
I think there are two definite issues with TikTok. One is that they've not been transparent about their own, how are people authenticated? So there's, TikTok has all these, there are people who claim to be parenting experts, and they're giving out some parenting advice. It may be very engaging, but is that really correct? So let's say something on infant sleeping, is this backed by science and by what doctors would tell you? So those are definitely one set of concerns on TikTok. Then the second, so we don't, they don't really have a way of providing credentialing or authentication of information. The second thing is that we should worry about is who owns our data. I mean, it's not just whether the Chinese government owns data or some other entity owns the data. The question is that it is definitely by a corporation that is not subject to United States law. And can they be subpoenaed if there is a concern about how our data is being used? If you recall, there were a lot of hearings on Capitol Hill where social media companies were asked to come and testify before Senate and so forth. Can we do that with TikTok? So those are questions that we should take seriously. Because who owns our data, our data privacy, how our data is being monetized without our consent? Those should be concerns for all of us as individuals.
Sure. Well, and that's come up too, regardless of TikTok and the concerns over the Chinese government. It comes out all the time. There's been issues with, you know, did Facebook sell data or did this company sell data to third party providers? So it does get to the question as to whether, you know, our sensitive data is being protected.
Yeah. And also in what way is the data being used? Facebook actually had to settle a lawsuit with the Department of I think it was the Housing and Human Development or Housing and Urban Development, sorry, HUD. And the thing was that Facebook ads, they allow selective targeting, but that was very discriminatory to minorities, and that violates the Fair Housing Act. So there were similar concerns that Facebook was, the ads were discriminatory to women in science-related fields. So those, again, are things that our laws do not permit. And so we, that's why, as I said, we all have a right to ask, how is our data being used? How Sure. are these companies, you know, are they putting some kind of checks and balances? So the way the ads are targeted is not discriminating or violating any of our laws that we already have in place. So that's something we should be worried about.
Before I let you go, just want to get your thoughts. What do you see as the future to social media in general? You know, where are we going from here? Whether it's Twitter or TikTok or something that we just haven't even really experienced yet. What is your general thoughts?
It's hard to sort of play, you know, it's an oracle. But one thing is, I think the data privacy issues are questions that we have to address at a societal level. And we are seeing some of these digital rights laws being put in place in Europe. Maybe it's a useful test case for us in the United States to see what's the experience. Can we learn something, both do's and don'ts? So I think all these algorithmic privacy related issues and where our data is being used, where algorithmic targeting, I think those will be important issues. And so social media platforms, it's a bit hard to imagine both Facebook or Twitter or whoever surviving in current form in like 4 or 5 years from now, because first, people are more concerned about their privacy probably. And second, some of that stuff is maybe not going to scale indefinitely. And so that's what I would say.
Well, I appreciate your time and to discuss this topic. It's a real fascinating one, and just appreciate you joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
We hope you enjoyed this Behind the Headlines episode of Hot Off the Wire. You can find us on every podcast platform, and we'd love it if you could take a moment to subscribe and leave a review. Finally, if you appreciate what we're doing with this program, we encourage you to invest in local journalism by supporting the newspaper in your community. I'm Terry Lipschitz, thanking you so much for listening to this Behind the Headlines episode of Hot Off the Wire from Lee Enterprises.